All right, so we're diving into something pretty heavy today.
Yeah.
The Doomsday Clock.
Right.
You've sent us a ton of stuff from the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. You know, that those are the folks who keep track of just how close we are to a global catastrophe. So I guess let's just get right to it. What's the latest update with this thing? What's pushing us closer to midnight, and what does it mean for us, you know, here in Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena?
Well, first thing to know is that the clock is currently sitting at 89 seconds.
89 seconds.
To midnight.
Wow.
Yeah, this was just announced on January 28th, 2025.
So very recent.
Very recent, and it's the closest it's ever been.
Yeah, 89 seconds. That's uncomfortably close. What's pushing us that close to the edge?
Well, the bulletin cites a whole range of threats. I mean, the war in Ukraine is obviously a major factor, especially with the constant worry about nuclear escalation.
Yeah.
But they're also really sounding the alarm on climate change.
Yeah.
We're seeing the effects of that right here in Texas.
Yeah, absolutely.
With the increasingly intense hurricane seasons, extreme heat.
Yeah. And it's not just these big global events, right? I mean, they mentioned pandemics too.
Yeah.
Specifically HPAI, avian influenza.
Right. It's a reminder that, you know, a new pandemic could be just around the corner.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then on top of all of that, there's this whole issue of disruptive technologies, you know, like facial recognition software used for surveillance or CRISPR technology.
Yeah.
Both have incredible potential, but
huge ethical and societal.
Exactly. So we've got nuclear war, climate change, pandemics, and these potentially disruptive technologies.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot to process.
But I think it's important to look at this within the historical context of the Doomsday Clock. You know, it was created back in 1947.
Right.
Initially focused solely on the threat of nuclear war.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing how it's evolved over time, I think, can give us some perspective on our current situation.
All right. I was looking at the timeline that you sent over, and one thing that really jumped out at me was 1953, when the development of the hydrogen bomb brought the clock alarmingly close to midnight. I mean, it makes you realize just how much destructive power we've created.
Absolutely. The hydrogen bomb was a game changer.
Yeah.
And it really ushered in a new era of fear and uncertainty.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, it's not all doom and gloom.
Right.
I mean, the clock has moved backwards, too.
Yeah.
Like in 1991 with the end of the Cold War.
Right.
That was a time of great hope and optimism.
A lot of hope.
So the clock isn't just a tool to scare us. It also reflects positive change when it happens.
Absolutely.
I think that's an important point.
Yeah.
Now, climate change was added as a major factor in 2007.
Yeah.
That's when we really started to see the effects of climate change becoming more pronounced.
Yeah, that was a pivotal year.
Okay.
A recognition that the threats to humanity were no longer just about nuclear war.
Right.
But about a complex interplay of factors, including our impact on the environment.
Okay. So this doomsday clock is clearly not just some arbitrary gimmick.
Yeah.
It's a serious assessment of the risks we face put together by a credible group of experts.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to ask, is this just fear-mongering?
That's a very valid question. And I think it's important to remember who's behind the Doomsday Clock. It's the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, a highly respected organization made up of scientists and experts from all sorts of different fields, you know, nuclear risk, climate change, biosecurity, and technology.
Yeah.
Their Science and Security Board, which is actually responsible for setting the clock, is made up of specialists who take this responsibility very, very seriously.
Yeah.
They're not just trying to scare people. They're trying to warn us, to wake us up to the very real dangers that we face as a species.
So it's not about being alarmist. It's about being realistic and urging action.
Exactly. And they're very clear that this isn't about predicting doomsday.
Okay.
It's about understanding the risks and taking action to mitigate them.
Right.
We're not helpless passengers on this planet. Our choices, our actions, they absolutely matter.
Okay, so we've established that the doomsday clock is a serious warning, not just a scare tactic. But what can we actually do about it? I mean, these are global issues.
Right.
What can we as individuals or even as a community here in Southeast Houston do to make a difference?
That's where I think the idea of think and act locally becomes really powerful.
Okay.
You know, we may not be able to single-handedly stop a nuclear war or reverse climate change.
Right.
But we can make changes in our own lives and in our communities that contribute to a more sustainable, peaceful, and resilient future.
What do you mean? Give me some concrete examples. What can we do right here, right now?
Well, think about climate change.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we can choose to drive less. We can carpool. We can use public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
We can support local businesses that are taking steps to reduce their carbon footprint. We can make our homes more energy efficient.
Those are all great ideas, and they're things that we can actually do even if it's just one small step at a time.
Oh, exactly. And those small steps add up, especially when we do them collectively.
Yeah.
But it's not just about individual actions. It's also about engaging in our community.
Right.
We can support local organizations that are working on climate change. We can advocate for policies that promote sustainability. We can educate ourselves and others about the issues.
You're right. Engaging in our community, advocating for change at the local level, that's something we can all do.
Absolutely. And it can have a ripple effect.
Yeah.
When we make changes in our own lives and in our communities,
mm-hmm.
it sends a message. It inspires others to do the same. And that's how we create real lasting change.
I love that. Think globally, act locally.
Mm.
It's about taking those big, scary global issues and breaking them down into manageable steps that we can take right here in Deer Park, LaPorte, in Pasadena. So we've talked about the doomsday clock, its history, the very real threats that it represents, and the importance of individual and community action. But I'm still thinking about this whole idea of a symbolic clock. You know, it's a powerful image, but is it actually effective?
Yeah.
Does it really motivate people to take action? Or does it just make them feel helpless and anxious?
That's a great question, and it's one we'll explore further in part two of our deep dive.
Okay.
But for now, I'd like to leave you with this thought.
Yeah.
The doomsday clock isn't just a warning,
mm-hmm.
it's a reminder. It's a reminder that we have agency, that we have the power to shape the future. And it's a reminder that the time to act is now.
That's a powerful message, and one that I think is especially relevant here in our community. We have the power to make a difference, to create a more sustainable, peaceful, and resilient future for ourselves and for our children.
Absolutely. And we'll continue this conversation in part two. But for now, I encourage you to reflect on what you've learned today and think about what actions you can take both individually and in your community to make a positive impact.
Great. We'll be back soon with part two, where we'll delve even deeper into the doomsday clock and what it means for us. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to our deep dive into the doomsday clock.
So we left off talking about the effectiveness of the doomsday clock as a symbol. Like, is it really a good way to motivate people to take action?
It's a complex question. Some argue that, you know, focusing on these large scale threats can be overwhelming and lead to a sense of helplessness.
Yeah.
People might just tune out or feel like their individual actions don't matter.
I can see that. It's like, what difference can one person in Deer Park really make when we're talking about global nuclear war or, you know, climate change?
Right. But I think there's another side to it. The doomsday clock, by highlighting these existential threats, can also serve as a wake-up call.
Okay.
It can shake people out of their complacency and make them realize the urgency of the situation.
So it's not just about scaring people. It's about motivating them to act.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The key is to translate that awareness into action. And that's where I think focusing on what we can do locally is so important.
Okay.
Gives people a sense of agency, a feeling that they can actually make a difference.
Okay, let's break this down.
Yeah.
We got this whole web of threats.
Mm-hmm.
Nuclear war, climate change, pandemics, and disruptive technologies.
Mm-hmm.
What are some concrete things we can do right here in our community to address these challenges?
Let's start with climate change,
okay.
Since it's something we're all experiencing firsthand here in Texas.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen increasingly intense heat waves, stronger hurricanes, even the winter storm a few years back that crippled the state.
Oh, yeah. That winter storm was a real wake-up call for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
It showed us just how vulnerable we are to extreme weather events.
It did. And as climate change continues, these events are only going to become more frequent and more severe. So what can we do? Well, we can start by reducing our own carbon footprint.
Okay.
We can drive less, use public transportation, or even walk or bike whenever possible.
I know a lot of people are already doing that. We've got some great bike trails here in Deer Park and LaPorte.
Yeah.
And the city's been working on expanding public transportation options.
That's great to hear. And even small changes can make a difference,
mm-hmm.
like making our homes more energy efficient. Simple things like switching to LED light bulbs, using less water, or properly insulating our homes can have a real impact on our energy consumption.
Those are all great ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the bigger picture? How do we address climate change at a systemic level?
Well, we can start by supporting local initiatives and organizations that are working on climate change mitigation and adaptation.
Okay.
There are groups right here in our community that are planting trees, cleaning up our waterways, and advocating for policies that promote sustainability.
Right. And we can also support businesses that are taking steps to reduce their environmental impact.
Yeah.
There are a lot of local businesses that are embracing renewable energy, reducing waste, and adopting sustainable practices.
Exactly. And we can vote for leaders who prioritize climate action and hold our elected officials accountable for their decisions. Remember, change starts at the local level. When we make our voices heard in our communities, it can have a ripple effect.
Okay, so we've talked about climate change. What about nuclear war? It feels like that's a whole other level of threat, something that's almost too big to comprehend, let alone address.
It's definitely a daunting issue, but I don't think we should just throw up our hands and say there's nothing we can do. Remember, the doomsday clock moved further away from midnight after the end of the Cold War.
Right.
That shows that diplomacy and disarmament efforts can work.
So what can we do at the local level to promote peace and nuclear disarmament?
Well, we can start by educating ourselves and others about the risks of nuclear weapons and the importance of diplomacy and conflict resolution. We can support organizations that are working to reduce nuclear stockpiles and prevent nuclear proliferation.
Okay, I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
But it still feels like such a massive global issue.
Mm-hmm.
How do we even begin to tackle something like that from here in Southeast Houston?
It's about shifting our mindset. Instead of feeling overwhelmed by the scale of the problem, we can focus on creating a culture of peace and understanding in our own community. We can support organizations that promote dialogue and understanding between different cultures and faiths.
I see what you mean. It's about fostering a more peaceful and tolerant society, starting right here at home.
Exactly. And it's also about recognizing that even small actions can have a ripple effect. When we promote peace and understanding in our own lives and communities, it can inspire others to do the same. And that's how we create a more peaceful world.
Okay, we've talked about climate change and nuclear war.
Yeah.
What about pandemics? I mean, we're still dealing with the aftermath of COVID-19, and the threat of new and emerging diseases is always looming. What can we do to be prepared for the next pandemic?
Well, a lot of the things we do to protect ourselves from COVID-19 are also effective against other infectious diseases.
Yeah.
Things like washing our hands frequently, covering our coughs and sneezes, and staying home when we're sick.
Right. Those basic hygiene practices are so important.
They are. And we can also make sure we're up to date on our vaccinations. Vaccines are one of the most effective ways to prevent the spread of infectious diseases, not just for ourselves, but for our community as a whole.
I know some people are hesitant about vaccines, but the science is clear. They're safe and effective.
Absolutely. And they're not just about protecting ourselves. They're about protecting our community, especially those who are most vulnerable.
So it's about individual responsibility, but also about community solidarity. It's about looking out for each other.
Exactly. And that's a key part of building resilience, both at the individual and community level.
Okay, so we've talked about climate change, nuclear war, and pandemics. What about disruptive technologies? It feels like technology is advancing so rapidly, and it's hard to keep up with all the potential risks and benefits.
It is, and that's why it's so important to stay informed and engage in critical discussions about the impact of these technologies on our lives and our society.
But how do we do that? I mean, it's hard enough to keep up with our daily lives, let alone the latest developments in AI or biotechnology.
It can be overwhelming, but there are resources available. We can follow reputable news sources, listen to podcasts like this one, and attend events and workshops on these topics. There are also local organizations that are working to raise awareness about the ethical and societal implications of emerging technologies.
Right. And we can have conversations with our friends, family, and neighbors about these issues. The more we talk about it, the more informed we'll be and the better equipped we'll be to make decisions about how these technologies are developed and used.
Absolutely. And we can also support organizations that are working to ensure that these technologies are developed and used responsibly and ethically.
So it's about staying informed, engaging in critical discussions, and supporting organizations that are working to ensure that technology serves humanity, not the other way around.
Exactly. And it's also about being mindful of our own technology use and how it might be impacting our lives and our relationships.
Yeah, I know I'm guilty of spending too much time on my phone sometimes. It's easy to get sucked into the digital world and lose sight of what's happening around us.
It is, and that's why it's so important to find a balance. Technology can be a powerful tool, but it's important to use it consciously and intentionally.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here, exploring the threats facing humanity and what we can do about them, both individually and collectively. But I'm still thinking about this whole idea of a symbolic clock. It's a powerful image, but is it ultimately a helpful one? Does it actually motivate positive change, or does it just feed our anxieties and make us feel powerless?
That's a tough question, and one that's open to debate. There's no doubt that the doomsday clock can be anxiety-provoking, even paralyzing for some. But I think it can also be a catalyst for positive change.
Okay.
It can spark conversations, raise awareness, and motivate people to get involved in finding solutions.
It's like that saying, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. If we let fear control us, we're doomed. But if we can channel that fear into action, into a determination to create a better future, then the doomsday clock can be a powerful tool for change.
I agree. It's all about how we choose to respond to this stark reminder of our shared fate. We can succumb to despair, or we can rise to the challenge. The choice is ours.
So the doomsday clock, this ticking time bomb, is really a reflection of ourselves.
Yeah.
Of our choices, our values, our capacity for both destruction and creation.
It is. It's a mirror held up to humanity, reflecting our flaws, our fears, but also our potential for greatness. It's a reminder that we're not just passive observers of history, we're active participants, and the future is ours to shape.
That's a powerful thought, and I think it leads perfectly into our next topic, individual resilience and preparedness.
Mm.
We've talked about global solutions, about systemic change, but it's also important to think about what we can do as individuals to prepare for potential disruptions and build resilience in our own lives.
Absolutely. And this is where the Think and Act Locally mindset really comes into play.
Okay.
It's about taking responsibility for our own well-being and the well-being of our community.
Okay, so what does that look like in practice? What are some specific things we can do to build resilience?
Well, it starts with having a plan for emergencies. Do you have a plan for what you would do if there was a hurricane, a flood, a power outage, or some other type of disaster?
I have a vague idea of what I would do, but I haven't really put together a formal plan.
That's something I would encourage everyone to do. It doesn't have to be complicated, but it's important to think through the potential scenarios and have a plan in place.
What kind of things should be included in an emergency plan?
Well, you should have a communication plan with your family or household members.
Okay.
Designate a meeting place in case you get separated and make sure everyone knows how to contact each other.
That's a good idea. We often take communication for granted until it's gone.
It's also a good idea to have an emergency kit with essential supplies like food, water, first aid supplies, flashlights, batteries, and a radio.
Right. Those are all things we would need in an emergency situation.
And think about any specific needs your family might have, like medications, baby supplies, or pet food.
Good point. It's about anticipating those needs and being prepared.
Exactly. And it's not just about having supplies. It's also about knowing how to use them. Do you know how to shut off the gas or water in your home? Do you know basic first aid?
Honestly, no. I've never really thought about those things.
Those are valuable skills to have. There are classes and resources available locally where you can learn basic survival skills and emergency preparedness.
That's a great idea. I'll have to look into that.
And building resilience isn't just about preparing for physical emergencies. It's also about building mental and emotional resilience. It's about learning how to cope with stress, anxiety, and uncertainty.
That's so important, especially in today's world. It feels like there's a constant barrage of bad news and stressful events.
It does. And it's easy to feel overwhelmed and powerless.
Mm.
But there are things we can do to build our mental and emotional resilience.
Okay.
Things like practicing mindfulness, spending time in nature, connecting with loved ones, and seeking professional help when we need it.
Those are all great tips. It's about taking care of ourselves both physically and mentally.
Exactly. And it's also about building community resilience.
Okay.
We're stronger together than we are alone. Do you know your neighbors? Are you involved in any local groups or organizations?
I know some of my neighbors, but I'm not really involved in any local groups.
I would encourage you to consider getting involved in your community. It's a great way to meet new people, learn new skills, and build a network of support.
So building resilience is about being prepared, taking care of ourselves, and connecting with our community.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that we live in a complex and unpredictable world, and that things can change quickly. It's not about living in fear, but about being empowered to take care of ourselves and our loved ones in the face of whatever challenges may come.
Okay, I like that. Building resilience, fostering community, and being prepared. It's a proactive approach, a way to reclaim some agency in a world that often feels out of control.
It is. And it's an important complement to the global solutions we've discussed. We need to work on both fronts, addressing the root causes of these threats, while also building resilience at the individual and community level.
So we're not just waiting for the world to end. We're actively working to prevent it and preparing for whatever may come.
Precisely. The doomsday clock is not a countdown to oblivion. It's a reminder that we have a choice, that we can choose to create a future where that clock is moving away from midnight, not towards it. And that's a future worth fighting for.
And this message of think and act locally really resonates with that idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's about taking those big global challenges and finding ways to make a difference right here in our community.
Absolutely. It's about recognizing that even small actions can have a ripple effect. When we make changes in our own lives and in our communities, it can inspire others to do the same. And that's how we create real, lasting change.
I love that. It's about empowering ourselves to make a difference, to create a better future for ourselves and for generations to come.
Exactly. And we'll continue this conversation in part three, where we'll explore the psychological and cultural implications of the doomsday clock. We'll also talk about how these global threats are often portrayed in popular culture.
That sounds fascinating. I'm looking forward to it. But for now, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll delve even deeper into the doomsday clock and what it means for us. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. It's been quite a conversation so far, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We've been exploring the doomsday clock, these very real global threats it represents, and what we can do about them, both as individuals and as a community here in Southeast Houston.
Yeah, it has. It has been a lot to unpack, but I think it's important to have these conversations, you know?
Right.
We need to be aware of the challenges we face so we can take meaningful action.
Absolutely.
Mm.
And speaking of action, we just finished talking about individual and community resilience, that idea of thinking and acting locally. But now I kind of want to shift gears a bit and talk about the psychological impact of all this. You know, this doomsday clock, this idea of impending doom, it's a pretty heavy concept to grapple with, isn't it?
It is. And I think it's important to acknowledge that, you know, this constant awareness of existential threats
yeah.
can have a real impact on our mental and emotional well-being. You know, some people might feel overwhelmed, anxious, even paralyzed by fear,
right.
They might start to feel like nothing they do matters, that the world is just going to end anyway.
Yeah, that's understandable. It can be hard to stay positive when you're constantly bombarded with news about climate change, nuclear war, and pandemics.
Right.
It can make you feel like you're just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
It can. And that's why it's so important to find healthy ways to cope with these feelings. You know, it's important to talk to someone you trust to find ways to manage stress and anxiety and to focus on the things you can control.
You mentioned earlier that the doomsday clock has become a cultural touchstone.
Mm.
How has this idea of impending doom influenced our culture? Right. It seems like it's everywhere from movies and TV shows to music and even video games.
It is. Think about movies like Doctor Strangelove or The Watchmen or even more recent films like Don't Look Up.
Yeah.
They all explore these themes of global catastrophe and the potential for human self-destruction. And these stories, these cultural narratives, they can shape our perceptions, our fears, and even our actions.
So it's not just about the science. It's about the stories we tell ourselves about the world.
Exactly. And
right.
Sometimes those stories can be more about entertainment than about accurately reflecting the risks we face.
Right.
It's important to be discerning, to think critically about the information we're consuming, and to remember that these fictional scenarios don't always reflect reality.
Right. We need to be able to separate the hype from the actual threats and not let fear control our lives.
Absolutely. But I also think there's a positive side to how these themes are explored in popular culture.
Okay.
Sometimes these stories can help us process complex issues, grapple with difficult emotions, and even inspire us to take action.
So it's a mixed bag. These cultural narratives can be both helpful and harmful, depending on how they're presented and how we choose to engage with them.
That's a good way to put it. It's all about being aware of the potential impact of these stories and using them as an opportunity for reflection and conversation.
Okay, so we've talked about the psychological impact of the doomsday clock.
Yeah.
And how it's permeated our culture. But ultimately, is this whole symbolic clock a helpful thing? Does it actually motivate positive change, or does it just make people feel anxious and powerless?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And I don't think there's a simple answer. It probably varies from person to person. For some, the doomsday clock might be a source of anxiety and despair. But for others, it might be a call to action, a reminder that we need to wake up and take responsibility for the future.
So it's all about how we choose to respond to this information, to this stark reminder of our shared vulnerability.
Exactly. We can choose to let fear paralyze us, or we can choose to channel that fear into action. We can choose to focus on the things we can control, to make changes in our own lives and in our communities, and to work towards a better future.
And that's really the message we've been trying to convey throughout this entire deep dive, isn't it?
Nope.
It's not about giving up hope. It's about taking action. It's about recognizing that we have the power to make a difference, even in the face of seemingly insurmountable challenges.
Absolutely. And it's about remembering that we're not alone in this. There are countless individuals and organizations working tirelessly to address these global threats and to create a more sustainable and peaceful world. We need to support each other, work together, and never give up hope.
Well said. And that's a perfect note to end our deep dive on. The doomsday clock may be a stark reminder of the challenges we face, but it's also a testament to our resilience, our ingenuity, and our enduring hope for a better future. So if you found value in our show, please support us at thinkandactlocally.com/donate. Link in show notes.